The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland.
Hello.
Still to come, Jim Root will join us momentarily to talk college hoops. What a day of college basketball. In fact, we have a tip-off in about a half hour.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So people are, we're getting tweets, like how many people are going to overbet the first game today? So we'll get into all college basketball with Jim Root here momentarily.
UMass and Richmond.
Chrissy Andrews will also join us. Yeah, dude, college basketball today. I mean, you're talking about...
I mean, on a Tuesday morning, Richmond laying three.
Kelly's all over it. Today, you got the Colonial Championship, the Horizon Championship, Northeast Championship, Summit Championship, West Coast Conference Championship, Southland Semis, Big Sky Semis, America East Semis. Not to mention, of course, the beginning of the ACC, A-10, Big West,
yep.
Metro Atlantic, and WAC tournaments.
Whew.
Man.
Any thoughts on the West Coast Conference game tonight? Are you going to that game tonight?
Parlay called me, said, well, you want to go to the West Coast Conference championship? I may go with him. We'll see.
I
got tennis to handicap. That's the thing.
I must have missed my call.
I got tennis to handicap because it is tennis's fifth major, or de facto fifth major, in tennis paradise at Indian Wells. And the draw came out yesterday. By the way, Drew Dinsick and I are going to do a podcast on this this afternoon. Going to pull him off the ski slopes to talk Indian Wells. Indian Wells is hard courts, Kelly. But for those of you who are tennis hards out there, as we call them, it's the slowest and the grimiest of hard courts. So it plays slower than most hard courts. And so it's why Iga won it last. Like, Iga had success on it. It's great surface for her.
It's the best hard court surface for the clay experts?
That is correct.
Okay.
You could say it that way. We'll see if our guest Brad Gilbert would disagree with us. The draw came out yesterday. And it's funny because usually you're like, oh, this quarter's the hardest. I can tell you what the easiest quarters are. I'm not sure I could tell you what the hardest ones are because they are loaded. But Iga is the short shot, plus 150 on the ladies' side. The next short shot on the ladies' side, and by the way, shop around for these prices because give or take a few cents on these. But Iga's plus 150, Iga Swiatek, for those who don't know, I'm just calling her by first name, the number one women's tennis player in the world. She's plus 150, and the next short is Aryna Sabalenka at 8-1. Everybody else double digits. Now, the men's side is where it gets pretty interesting because there is no Rafa Nadal because of injury. There is no Novak Djokovic because we have not lifted the non-vaccination rule on foreigners until after the Sunshine Double here at Indian Wells and Miami clears. So Novak Djokovic, we are left to assume, not permitted into the country, which leaves a Carlos Alcaraz, you would think would be the short shot, but he's coming off bad injury. Or he limped his way into a loss in the finals against Cam Norrie just a couple weeks ago on clay, which means that Daniil Medvedev is your short shot at plus 275, and I believe he got the easiest draw in the quarter. Let's bring in Brad Gilbert. Do we have Brad? No, we do not have Brad yet. Okay, so Daniil Medvedev's at plus 275. Alcaraz is 6-1. And then you have Stefanos Tsitsipas at plus 750 and Jannik Sinner at 9-1. Holger Rune is an interesting choice there at 20-1. Taylor Fritz is the defending champion at Indian Wells. He is 22-1. So the number one American player in the world, the defending champion at this tournament, you got to go down eight players before you get to him. Now we bring in former world number four. I loved it as a kid. He seemed like he was in the D.C. finals. On the D.C. tour stop every year. It was 2 years in a row. Loved watching him then. He's a big Warriors fan. He's kind enough to rejoin us. ESPN's Brad Gilbert. How you doing, Brad?
Good morning. How are you? Yeah, I played in D.C. a bunch. Got to the semis a few times. Got to the final, but no winner's circle. But always liked playing there. And you know, once you were in Washington in the summer, it was going to be hot in Rock Creek.
Oh, Rock Creek Park. Humidity abounds. Let me just ask you this, though. I started before you came on the air, Brad, with sort of, you know, with Nadal out because of injury, Djokovic out because of vaccine rules, and Alcaraz coming off what looked to be a really tough injury against Cam Norrie a couple weeks back. It looks like Daniil Medvedev's in the easiest quarter based on the draw. Do you agree that he should be a plus 275 short shot and that Alcaraz is 6-1 here?
I feel like there's opportunity in the draw, you know, in a few sections. And, you know, obviously, you know, Medvedev coming in on three consecutive wins, and he plays very well on hard court, probably his best surface outside. And the way he's playing, it's almost like two tournaments. You get through, you know, kind of like the first, you know, couple of matches, and then the second week, you know, especially if the weather gets warmer, the courts get quicker. But I would probably say he, you know, coming in just because of the, you know, the little injury concern for Alcaraz, escape from Alcaraz. I mean, I would say that Medvedev is probably the slight favorite at the moment.
If I came to you 2 Mondays from now and I said to you, hey, Brad, one of these 20-1 or longer shots on the men's side won it. Holger Rune, I'll give you some options. Holger Rune is 20-1. The defending champion, Taylor Fritz, defending champion of this tournament, 22-1. You have Cam Nori, who I just mentioned, at 33-1. If I came to you from the future and said one of these long shots won, either those guys or beyond, who would that person be?
See, like, to me, those aren't long shots. You know, you're not taking somebody that's 50 in the rankings. You're taking somebody, who is ranked high. And if you came to me in 2 Mondays from now and, like, you told me somebody might even been, you know, outside the top 15 and won it, especially with Djokovic not being here. And obviously the way he's been playing and plays on hard courts, you know, let's say, you know, you have a couple of upsets early because they tend to sometimes happen in the desert early. I would not be surprised if this thing turns into, you know, pretty wide open. And there'll be some sections where you go, there's some real opportunity here for some players.
Ladies side. Go ahead.
And Rude, has been struggling a little bit this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had somebody like a dark horse, you know, be in the semis.
Be in the semis. Going to stop short of winning it all, though. Just the semis.
Yeah, but, maybe somebody outside the top 40 or 50 being in the semis.
Okay.
You know, we don't get that much in these big master series.
Ladies side, I had just talked about, before you came on, about how this is a hard court surface, but yet it is really the grainiest of them. It's a slower hard court surface. Iga, plus 150. The next closest player is Aryna Sabalenka, who until she lost to Barbora Krejcikova was just having the most amazing run of her career. No shame in losing to Krejcikova a couple weeks back. She's 8-1. Do you believe the odds ought to be that wide?
Well, let's say at the desert, in the desert last year in Dubai and Doha, that's where Swiatek really started to take off. Then the Sunshine Double, and she was unbeatable on clay. And, there was a lot of tournaments that you might start saying, Iga versus the field, and you're for sure taking the Iga, the way she was playing. Now, this year, with a couple of losses, both on hard courts, both in straight sets, I wouldn't be pushing the chips all in saying that I would take Iga over the field. And the tournament also, it's slow and it's grainy, where in the first few matches, the weather's cooler, especially the night. The court can play very slow. But then all of a sudden, if you get 80, 90-degree weather in the second week, which has happened numerous times, it's even gotten as much as 100, then that court plays really quick. Once you get to semis and finals, matches are definitely in the day, in the heat of the day. If you get hot weather, that court plays quick. So that's always a variable of this tournament as well, how the surface can be totally different based upon the weather.
All right, Brad, before we let you go, because, by the way, we're talking to former number four player of the world, Brad Gilbert, ESPN's tennis analyst, Brad Gilbert, who's so great on all the broadcasts. For ESPN on all the tournaments that they cover. You're also a big Warriors fan. You've come on this show before, usually French Open time when the Warriors are in the postseason and they're, the team that everybody has to beat. How do you feel about their chances this year from their perch this time around?
know, they're a little bit like a, you know, up and down tennis player at the moment. You know, they have their, you know, their great moments at home, and it's been a struggle on the road and trying to, you know, figure out like a consistent lineup. You know, and like any term, if you get there, you got a shot. They're certainly not anywhere near they were a year ago. You know, hopefully we'll avoid Phoenix probably in the first round. But, I mean, we're kind of like, you know how you were talking about a long shot at, you know, and at 20, 22 to 1?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of where we are, but we're better than that. You know, but I'm certainly not pushing all the chips in. It's been an amazing run. I never would, like, you know, say they can do something because, you know, you never know. You know, they get unbelievably healthy and get lucky, you know, then, you know, who knows? You get confidence, just like a tennis player. You get confidence and like, uh-oh, I remember what we're doing here.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the single most surprising thing in the world, that's for sure, to see them soar again. Brad, appreciate it very much. Enjoy Indian Wells.
Have a good morning.
You too. Brad Gilbert, everybody, at BG Tennis Nation on Twitter. Always a great follow. Always big with the nicknames as well, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Roberto Bautista Agut, Robbie Bats, that kind of thing.
I like that.
That kind of thing. Escape from Alcatraz. He throws the ball in there. I think there's a shot at one of these long shots on the men's side in this tournament. I really do think. Holger Rune, someone like that. Taylor Fritz. Some of these 20-1s are longer. Again, Drew Dinsick and I will do the Beating the Book Indian Wells podcast later today. And we'll put that up for everybody to consume. All the tennis hards out there. Jim Root, College Hoops, next. Numbers Game, Visa, the sports betting.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get everything you need to bet the madness this year for only $19. Whether you're filling out a bracket or betting against the spread, our team is here to get you ready for every game and every round of the tournament. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get unlimited access to our daily best bets, tools like our exclusive betting splits, plus our big dance bracket and betting guides. These guides feature in-depth breakdowns of all 68 teams. Remember, there's the play-in teams as well. Cinderella selections, bracket predictions, and picks on every tournament game from VSiN experts like Brent Musburger and Greg Hoops Peterson. Sign up today to get the betting guides, plus full access to VSiN through the end of the tournament for only $19. At VSiN.com/subscribe. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. I exchanged with Greg Peterson, by the way, Kelly. And he's like, dude, I make my numbers. Then I go right to bed after he does the Greg Peterson experience at night. So like 6 a.m. to noon, he is just out.
Yeah, he's out cold. He does a show from, what is that, 9 to midnight?
I'm going to totally pressure him to come on.
Pacific time.
I'm totally going to pressure him. Come on, Greg. It's your time of year. Come on, man. Let's do this. We got college basketball in 14 minutes. Jim Root, we need you from Three Man Weave. How you doing, Jim?
I'm wonderful. Yeah, I'm not sleeping right now. Well, I don't do a show until 3 a.m., though, so
that's
I guess I don't have the same excuse as Greg.
Let's start with the game because some people want to have some action here in a couple minutes, 14 minutes. UMass and Richmond with Richmond favored by 2.5. Any thoughts here?
Maybe a little bit of a lean to Richmond. UMass has been injured all season, or especially all league play, had some guys in and out of the lineup. They were really good in the non-conference, so maybe there's a reset button for them where they get back to that level. But Richmond's got the best player on the floor, and Tyler Burton, senior leader for them. I think I lean that way, and I think the market has shifted it a little bit off of where analytical lines have that. I'm looking at KenPom has it -1. Obviously, 2.5 in the market. I think that's for a reason. So maybe a lean to the Spiders.
Yeah, the Atlantic 10 tipping off in about 13 minutes. ACC tips off tonight. Big West, mentioned the Metro Atlantic and the WAC. And we also, in the tournaments that have already gotten underway, American East semis, Big Sky semis, Southland semis, and then five championship games tonight. Colonial, Horizon, Northeast, Summit, and West Coast Conference right here in Vegas with Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Let's start with Gonzaga and St. Mary's. This is the conference that the way the bracket is formed, they make sure as hard as they can that Gonzaga and St. Mary's will end up in it. BYU had something to say about it yesterday. Gonzaga's favored by 2.5. What do you like here?
Like in Gonzaga here, they've just been so good down the stretch. Basically, since February 1st, they've had the best offense in the country, and it's not even close. Like, not even comparable. They're like 10 points per 100 possessions better than the second-best offense since February 1st. Defense still has some issues. We saw that last night against San Francisco. Don's got going from beyond the arc, got some stuff near the rim as well. But I liked what Gonzaga did in the second matchup against St. Mary's. They were able to get out and transition a little bit. Their shooters have really become more potent. They're spacing the floor with Ben Gregg coming in as the stretch four off the bench. That's really tough for St. Mary's to deal with. And Gonzaga's good enough in pick and roll 1v1 type stuff where St. Mary's doesn't want to help off that. And Gonzaga has the individual talent to take advantage of it. So I'm leaning the Zags there. It's breaking my heart that I'm not going to be there in time. I've got to fly out to the desert
Up
this afternoon.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I'll land about halfway through that game, so not going to be able to make it over there, but very, very excited for it.
Oh, you missed the opportunity to hang with Parlay and me. Jeff Parlay and I might be at that game.
Heartbreaking there. Come on.
I know it's heartbreaking. We are such great company. Let me ask you this one more, because I asked, was it Matt or, I can't remember, was it Matt or Kai that I asked this of, but I did that little formula that I do every year, tried and true, and this year there's six teams, apologies to Texas, who's sort of on the cusp here also, but six teams basically have come up every time. It's Alabama, it's Purdue, it's UCLA, it's UConn, it's who am I forgetting?
Houston's probably in there, right?
Houston is in there as well, and the sixth team would be, did I mention UCLA? I can't even remember. Anyway, there's six teams, and I said, okay, if the national champion comes from outside of that group of six, who is it? Kansas, of course, is the sixth of the six. His answer was Gonzaga this year. I believe it was Kai.
That sounds like Kai. If I know him this season, he's a believer.
Yeah. So what would your answer be? If it came from outside of those six, who would it be?
At this stage, I would probably give it to Marquette because they right now the defense isn't good enough to qualify for it. But over the last couple of weeks, the defense has been good enough. They don't have that true rim protector. Their defensive rebounding is definitely a little bit weak, but they are frenetic enough defensively to cause problems. The offense is elite, and they, like I said, they've progressed on the defensive end, where somebody like Baylor or Gonzaga, who I liked a lot preseason, the defense has stayed like out close to the top 100, and that's just a problem. We haven't seen those teams succeed in March, so I'll give it to Marquette outside of that group.
Okay.
The other one would be TCU, because I love the Horned Frogs. I think they're healthy enough. When they're healthy, they're a top 5 to 10 team to me, power rating-wise, and they're finally seeming to trend in that direction. Hoping they get a run in the Big 12 and get some better seeding for the NCAA tournament.
What happened to them on Saturday? There was a lot of wacky results on Saturday.
Yeah, I whiffed on that one. I liked TCU on the road there. They had already blown out Oklahoma the first matchup, and it went haywire there. Eddie Lampkin didn't play, but that's not a huge excuse for them. They're super deep up front. Yeah, I'm hoping it was just an outlier result, and they're going to be just fine going forward.
A lot of weird results on Saturday with big-time teams, that's for sure. A lot of blowouts of big-time teams. And Marquette played a classic against St. John's. That was one of the most entertaining college basketball games you'll ever see. That game was unbelievable. Okay, let me ask you specifically about the Northeast Championship. This is Merrimack versus Fairleigh Dickinson. Now, I bring this game up because, and we've talked about this in the last few years about Bellarmine, where they're ineligible. They were ineligible to make, and still are, to make the NCAA tournament, not that they're involved this year, but they were ineligible till 2025, talking about Bellarmine, because of the NCAA-mandated reclassification rules, which means you have to take 4 years, which is just insane.
Yeah.
Fairleigh Dickinson is in the same situation. Or excuse me, Merrimack, right? Or Fairleigh Dickinson is in because of that rule applying in this conference as well. So Fairleigh Dickinson has nothing to play for here, right? Because they're in the tournament. They're in the big dance. They've already won the Northeast Conference. So do you play Merrimack here? Has this gone too high at 4 points?
It's gone a little too high for me. I know Fairleigh Dickinson has done a little bit of the like celebration tour. Their coach has given all the interviews of like congratulations on making the dance, et cetera. But Fairleigh Dickinson swept the two meetings between these two this year, and they set up fairly well to play against Merrimack. Merrimack known for this weird zone that is really pressure heavy in the half court, but also keeps you out of the paint, forces turnovers. Fairleigh Dickinson has these awesome small guards that have played together for 4 years. They transferred from a D2 school. That's the interesting part, is Merrimack's transitioning, But Fairleigh Dickinson's two best players and their coach are in their first year in D1 from D2, but they transferred rather than moving like Merrimack did. I just think the matchup for FDU is decently playable, and I don't think they want to back into the tournament. I think there's still plenty of incentive to actually conquer the Warriors and get the victory there.
Merrimack, you still have to wait years. Why is it 4 years? Why? What's the justification for that?
It's archaic, silly, dumb, all of the above. I can't believe it's still like that. I think there's always an outcry whenever something like this happens. And with more and more D2 teams coming up, the outcry gets even louder. We'll see if the NCAA ever caves to the pressure. I think it should be 2 years. Yeah. That's fair to me.
4 years is like, sorry, kids, but your university made a choice and you're going to have to suffer for it. You can't have this experience. All right, of the remaining games, then the ones we haven't talked about, what do you like best today, Jim?
I like Virginia Tech a little bit. Unfortunately, the spread maybe is probably too high to get on board. One I like is Weber State, actually. So going a little bit off the board. I'm sorry. I usually bring rotation number. I don't have that today. I apologize. But Weber State taking on Montana State is too split during the regular season. Weber has the talent to compete with them. They forced 15 turnovers the first time they played and shot 65% inside the arc. I think that's sustainable again here. They've got a really talented core of both guards and then a versatile forward, Dylan Jones, that can give Montana State some problems, who admittedly has been rolling lately. But out in that Big Sky Conference, getting 6 points there with a team that, like I said, has played with them and beaten them once, I'll go with Weber State there, plus six.
Weber State plus six. Those are the ones you want to focus on? Anything else?
Let's see. What else do I have here? Looking down the board. You know, I think Northern Kentucky gets it done in the Horizon. They had a heartbreaker in the tournament final last year where they were up 10 in the second half and they let Wright State come back in and end up winning on a buzzer beater. But they feel like they have solved some of their issues. Really, really impressive performance yesterday to knock off the one seed and basically control that game against Youngstown. Cleveland State's been a team I haven't fully believed in all year, and they thrashed Milwaukee at the rim yesterday. You're not going to do that against NKU. They play a tough zone. You have to shoot over the top. I don't know if Cleveland State can do that. So I'm pretty willing to lay the three there with Northern Kentucky, or if you want to put them their money line in a parlay with somebody else, I think it's a decent option as well. I like that matchup for them and the incentive.
All right, Jim, we got to run before we go. We don't have an NIT yet. We don't have, obviously, an NIT market. But look, give me a team right now that if they got in the NIT, you would think, oh, they might try to win this.
Villanova. I think they are going to be great value if they get in that event.
I like it. Villanova. Those are the kind of markets I like to bet. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Enjoy college basketball today.
Of course. Appreciate it. Enjoy the WCC final.
We will. Jim Root, everybody. From 3-Man Weave at 3MW_CBB. Chrissy Andrews, my mishpucha. Outside of football season, in the house. Next, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Split bets.
Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check them out. Today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com.
Washington State.
That's what we were talking about earlier, how Wazoo got, what was that, DraftKings? They got, what was the handle on them?
It was 24% of the handle and 5% of the bets.
So one every $4 at DraftKings to win the Pac-12 tournament on the Cougars of Washington State. Hmm. Did we do that? We might have something to do with that.
You brought it up yesterday. I was like, I haven't heard anybody bring up Washington State.
Over and over, people bringing them up. I did not make that bet. Again, the only future I have, now I have three futures in college basketball to win it all. Virginia, Creighton, and now UCLA. So, let's go, UCLA. Let's get it done. Ladies and gentlemen, this gentleman is always with us Mondays during football season to do guessing lines. We rarely talk to him off season. We do from time to time, but he joins us now in studio. I didn't know this was allowed. Chrissy Andrews, my mishpucha, runs the South Point Hotel Casino. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
I will say to you on air what I said to you off air. I spent vacation reading your book, Crashing the Felica Family Vacation in Turks and Caicos, reading Adelphos Mou on the beach, my brother, which Sean McCollum, by the way, is about Chrissy's brother. I was like, no, it's not about Chrissy. Chrissy doesn't have a brother. It was so good, man. I really mean this sincerely. So the first two books, Then One Day, Then One Year, nonfiction.
Right.
Great stories in Then One Day. Then One Year took on a life of its own during the pandemic, day-to-day stuff. This is you writing a novel, which you've worked on for a long time. And I could not have been more impressed by everything. The character development, the structure to it. The love letters contained within to Pittsburgh, to Greek culture, to other cultures. It was so well done. I'm so impressed by this.
Well, thank you. I always had to put my heart and soul in that book. And I am very proud of it. Sales are going well. You know, it's weird. Usually most publishers, they put out the hardback first and then they go to the paperback.
Yeah.
Mine did the opposite. They've just now, and as of, I think they said like Wednesday, so tomorrow, you could get it in hardback.
If someone asked, what's the book about? What is your elevator pitch?
My elevator pitch, a couple of guys find themselves in trouble with some very bad mobsters. They go to their old partner to try to get his son, who has now become a star quarterback, to fix a game. He's in his last game as a collegian, a meaningless game. They're big favorites. Seems like an easy thing. Father and son ain't going for it.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful book. Really well done. And I guess I asked you this, and this might be of interest to some people, but it certainly was to me. When you are writing this, and I'm so impressed, like you would spend time, you'd allot a certain amount of time every day to writing this over the years.
Yeah.
And I asked you this back there, but I'll do it here, which is, did you find that you knew where you were going, I would assume, but did you find that the characters started to have a life of their own that you could not have anticipated when you put pen to paper?
Unquestionably, yeah. And even once I got done with the book and once I was satisfied that it was done exactly the way I wanted to, I found there were some things in there that I didn't even realize. It was like some subconscious things that I had put in there, really.
There were some moments in the book where I was like, is Chrissy okay?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Now, I mentioned to you, and I don't want to give away too much, yeah, but I talked about kind of the karma stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of didn't even realize. I kind of knew, kind of ambiguously, I guess I would say, I'm not sure that's the right word, that it was in there. And then when I went and looked back, I says, oh, yeah, this makes perfect sense why they did this. And one of the things I try to say early in the book is that everybody does what's in their best interests.
Right. As humans do.
As humans do, yeah. Right. And I think when I look back at some of these characters, I think I really knew the characters, you know, in my head, you know, experienced a lot of that, you know, similarly in my lifetime, you know, but there's stuff in there that, you know, that once, even when I was done, I said, yeah, it really makes sense that they would do this because some of these guys act extremely selfishly,
mm-hmm.
You know, some are a little more noble in what they're doing. But everybody did do what they felt was best for them personally.
Adelphosmu is spelled how. People can go to Chrissy's Twitter at andrewsports.com, and there's a link there. It's also at Amazon, but it's A-D-E-L.
P-H-O-S.
P-H-O-S.
M-O-U.
M-O-U. Adelphosmu. Which
means my brother.
My brother. Last thing about this, and I think we're missing an opportunity. The reason that people fell in love with you to begin with is you on Story Time on the Beating the Book podcast, which was just the most I'm so honored that you used that vehicle to do it on. People love the way you tell stories. Will you do an audiobook on this? Is there any thought of doing that?
You know, I read the book out loud to my wife before I published it because there's stuff, you know, you missed a word, you did, so I didn't do, I've heard guys read novels. They would do it much, much better than me.
Really?
Yes.
I read it in your voice.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because my voice wasn't actually there. Yeah. But there's, you know, old guys, young guys, men, women, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I love audiobooks myself. I prefer to read. I mostly don't listen to audiobooks. But I've heard, you know.
Some people love it.
Yeah, actors do it. They would do a much better job than me. Now, my first two books, I should do in the first
because of nonfiction.
Yeah, nonfiction, yeah. And like the first one, I was about to do it. We had the studio time, everything. And that's when I got really sick.
Yeah.
So I told Anthony Curtis, I said, just do it. I said, you know, just go ahead. And then the second book, I don't know if I'm going to wind up doing that or not. I don't know.
You have another novel in you?
I'm about halfway, I'd say a third of the way through another novel.
Really?
But I'm writing another, I'm writing a follow-up to Then One Day. I had a few stories
yes.
that didn't make the book. A lot of them are a lot shorter, you know what I mean? So, like, there are going to be some quick vignettes. And also, a lot of people know my history of my health issues. I kind of want to explain what happened. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't know my wife's health issues, which she went through, some very traumatic stuff.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell her story in there, too. I think it's important for, you know, it's important to her and her family and all that, and I want to tell her story, too.
That was when I first met you, was in the throes of that. Yeah.
That was bad stuff.
Yeah. all right. Well, congratulations on all the success. Adele Fossmo, I would recommend it to everybody. Seriously, I would recommend it, even if I weren't buddies with you. It's outstanding. We are now on the cusp this morning of college basketball, the major conference college basketball tournaments beginning. You had an interesting answer to this question because we as a network, we fill content all day long, and we love this time of year in college basketball.
Sure.
Maybe in some cases, people like this week better than they do March Madness.
Yeah.
Which is you know, college basketball heads are like that. I get it. It's also a quieter weekend, a quieter week to come to Vegas to bet college basketball. From a bookmaking standpoint, though, what is your reaction to this week?
I've said this many times. It's always a little disappointing from action. I mean, most of these teams, most of these conferences, they're playing each other for the third time this year.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty much know what the total should be. We pretty much know what the point spread should be. We pretty much know what the money line should be. And there's always some, there's some movement. But there's not, and, you know, an action creates action. You know, movement creates action. There's not that much movement. I mean, so it's great for a basketball fan. I love this week.
Yeah.
You know, I love watching these teams.
But people aren't storming the window.
They're not storming the window. We'll have good crowds as far as watching the games and, you know, a lot of drama as far as that goes. But when you're looking at numbers moving that creates a lot of action, that really doesn't happen. And like I say, I'm always – it seems like I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm always disappointed – in not in the basketball this week, right, but in the amount of action they handle this week.
As opposed to next week.
Oh, as opposed to next week, yeah.
Which it doesn't matter what year it is, who are the favorites, if it's, you know, big favorites or if it's a lot of teams could win it. It is just complete mayhem every year.
Well, I grew up, I'm about, 10, 15 years older than you. And I remember back, you know, when UCLA and, you know, Lou Alcindor was. We knew the lineup: Alcindor and Lynn Shackelford and Mike Warren. Those guys, we knew it. You know, I mean, this is like their the freshmen couldn't play back then, so it was their third year playing together, and you knew it. And you knew Donnie May for Dayton was going to be pretty good, and you know, whoever, just keep running that list. This is the way it was for a long time, and I always said, "Boy, it's going to hurt college basketball when these guys go to the pros." It hasn't hurt it a lick.
Not from a betting standpoint.
You know, I think if you looked back at the teams, well, I don't know how the teams today would do against that Lou Alcindor team.
In my childhood, I mean, like the Georgetown teams. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Patrick was there three years, or 4 years.
Those Houston teams with Akeem and Drexler, like, I mean, it's a totally different sport. But yet, it there is no, betting needs a behemoth team.
No.
Doesn't exist.
No. No, I mean, we got Houston. We're down to 3-1. Somebody bet me strong the other day.
Oof.
And they are deservedly the number one seed and the favorite and all that. But, boy, they're just not – they're not like some of these teams we've seen in the past.
If you want to bet Houston, go elsewhere is what you're saying.
I'm down to 3-1. I mean, you got to find better than that.
More with Chrissy on the other side. Numbers game, Visa, the sports.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashing the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? Well, you could also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Christopher Felica, known by some as The Bear, at Fox Sports. He said, I read your book in Chris's voice, too. Yeah, with a special emphasis on Mike White.
Like I said, I threw that in there just to entertain myself.
Yeah, there was a little bleed over from story times into the fiction book. And he all, by the way, he chimes in on college basketball. Felica's taking Houston, UCLA, and Texas versus the field.
Ooh.
All three of those in our group of seven that we had today. You had a little thought on a Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, first of all, West Virginia, I think they're on the bubble right now, and I think they're a little better than their record shows. Right now you can get them, I know in my story, you can get 15-1. I'm not sure there's a lot of value right there at 15-1. You might be better just rolling over money lines. But I think they got a shot to win this thing, and I think they're playing for their lives.
This deserves mention that in some of these, in these tournaments that, begin today on Tuesday, begin tomorrow. I mean, these are back-to-back-to-back-to-back situations, right, if you keep advancing in these tournaments. And it's one of these quirky things where when we're talking about the big dance, you're almost better off losing early in some of these. And also from a value standpoint, it creates a little extra value.
No question about it. I think, if you're a team, you're almost locked into a one or two. And by the way, I think the seedings are very overrated. But like if you're a Kansas, let's say, you're probably going to be a one. I mean, if they lose, do they go to a two? I doubt it, so where's their motivation? And I think they might be better off losing early, resting up, getting everything, getting all their ducks in a row.
Nothing they'd ever admit to out loud.
Oh, they would never admit to it. No, and I'm sure Bill Self's going to be out there coaching to win the game.
Sure.
But it's not going to be life or death for Bill Self.
No, and it's also, again, when it happens, right, just like on Saturday, there's a bunch of big teams that just got blown out. TCU, Baylor, there's a bunch of teams that got beat bad. And, in the moment, how you are, recency bias, the most ultimate recency bias, right after the game, you're like, wow, boy, that team, they might not be as good as I thought they were. So people are going to inevitably think that in these conference tournaments if a team gets ousted early, one of the big teams or one of the teams that are short shots to win it all, and they're like, oh, well, maybe this team, Team X that lost early in their conference tournament, you'll just get an incremental bump in their odds to win it all. Yeah. And sometimes that's the best way to play it.
Yeah, I think you have an excellent point. I've seen it over the years. I was trying to think of one year. I know Kansas won it last year, but I think one of the years they went to the finals that they lost real early in the tournament. Everybody thought, oh, see, Kansas, they can't win the big games, blah, blah, blah. And they made a great run in the actual tournament.
That's, by the way, Kansas, if they win it, they would become the first back-to-back NCAA champion since Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Which was not quite 20 years ago, but over 15 years ago now. And there's going to be some people that run that narrative, like, oh, it's really hard to repeat back-to-back. I mean, I don't know that there's anything to that. It's a different, makeup of your squad.
Yeah.
More so than ever now, right? But you'll hear that bantied about, and some people will shy away just because mainstream media will throw that out there. Wow, it can't be Kansas. It's really tough to repeat. I don't think that has anything to do with anything.
No, and I remember being a kid, and I was at a Final Four in 1970 when UCLA was in the middle of that run. This was the Sidney Wicks, Curtis Rowe team that beat Pembroke Burroughs and Artis Gilmore.
You remember that one, Kelly? You remember that one?
1970, I was there. But, I saw UCLA. They came to Pittsburgh. I can't remember if they played Pitt or Duquesne, but I saw some, it was, so those were great, though, seeing us, because that was different, though, and UCLA is certainly an exception. But you go back a little further, like Cincinnati won it a couple years in a row, and they had Oscar Robertson as, in college.
Georgetown should have won.
Yeah.
They were in the finals 3 of 4 years, only ended up with one of them.
Yeah.
Lost to Carolina when Freddie Brown threw the ball to the wrong team at the
Houston,
end.
Houston, who you mentioned earlier, was right there a couple years in a row.
Well, Michael Graham, when Georgetown had Michael Graham, they beat Houston in 84. But then, of course, they lost in one of the big upsets in history to Villanova in the finals. But those of
UNLV could have won it a couple years ago. They got upset.
A lot of people believe conspiracy theories about that one.
Yeah. I don't particularly believe the conspiracy theories, but I entertained that thought, I would
say. Duke did win back-to-back, did they not?
No.
Leitner and those guys didn't win back-to-back?
No.
They didn't?
I don't think.
Let me check on that.
No, because they lost the 1 year to UNLV, and then came back the next year and beat them.
Okay.
The year they lost to UNLV, they lost by 30, I want to say, something like that.
Oh, they got destroyed that first time. That was Grandmama and UNLV, of course, back in the day. Okay, so let me just ask you this then. And we do this every year, but I want to talk about just general handle. So the Super Bowl is obviously king. And even when it was just legalized sports betting in Nevada, it was always, oh, to the Super Bowl, did we break the handle record every year just in the state of Nevada? Is it the first 4 days of March Madness equals the Super Bowl? Is it the entire tournament equals the Super Bowl? What is it?
Well, the entire tournament will do way more than the Super
Bowl.
We'll
do way more.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, we kind of throw it all in together. College basketball, the CBI and the NIT. I don't know who else is out there. The NIT's actually turned pretty good the last couple years.
I was right, by the way. Duke won back-to-back.
Did they really?
91 and 92, yeah.
Huh. And Florida was, what was that, 2000?
Florida was 2006 and 2007.
Wow, that late. Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to break your train of thought.
What was I saying?
I don't know. So all of March Madness will exceed the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Squirrel.
Squirrel.
The month of March with all the college basketball will probably greatly exceed the Super Bowl.
The month will greatly exceed the Super Bowl. Okay. Then let's compare that to the entirety of the NBA and NHL postseasons.
Oh, man. The NHL won't come close.
Won't come close.
No. The NBA, there's so much flexibility as to, who's in, who's out. I don't think the Lakers are going to make it, but they're always a lot of drama involved with the Lakers, and especially when they had LeBron.
Yeah.
Now it's just tremendous drama. Of course, when they had Kobe, too, and Shaq. So, it kind of depends on who's in it. If it's Denver, and I love Denver, I think they're a hell of a team, they're just not going to attract the attention that some of the other teams do. I think Phoenix will be a great story if they could get all the way there. And then on the other side, the Celtics are probably the biggest handle indicator if they make it. Milwaukee, as great as they are, I don't think they'll inspire the same handle that the Celtics will.
Warriors don't inspire handle?
They will, yeah. The Warriors do, definitely. I should have thrown them in there,
but
too.
But the whole NBA playoffs does not equal March Madness?
Oh, I don't think so, no. I'd have to go look.
That's amazing.
I shouldn't go out and just make that statement. Yeah. I should probably go look. Yeah.
Me with the questions.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because
I didn't know it was on with Mike Wallace this morning. Yeah. I must have missed that.
I'm morally safer. Think about that. That's all of those first round series. The first round is the first round of the NBA. But then, the NBA playoffs is interminable.
Yeah, just a period of time.
It's just like, oh, my God, are we still playing? But remember how they throw the NBA Finals into a locked date? So even if we finish early, we have to wait that period of time. When are they playing game one? All of that doesn't compare to March Madness is so awesome.
It is, and it's great. You're talking about the NBA playoffs. This is 30 years ago. Roxy Roxburgh sent me a cartoon. There's a guru on top of a mountain. The guy climbs up and says, "Great guru, how do I achieve eternal life? Follow the NBA playoffs."
Because it lasts forever.
Yeah.
Man. And the NBA playoffs, I say this all the time. When the Washington Bullets won the NBA championship in 1978, Sports Illustrated ran the story on page 77.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know about that league.
Jack Maron.
Where it's come from.
Jack Maron.
Buffalo Braves. Jack Maron.
Jack Maron, I think he was from Farrell, Pennsylvania. That's why I was kind of rooting for was it Gus Johnson on that team?
You're going way back. No. The Bullets team that won the championship was Wes Unseld, Elvin Hayes, and Bobby Dandridge. You're going Baltimore Bullets.
Oh, I'm more Baltimore Bullets.
Okay. Yeah, you're going back.
Well, you're killing me on trivia today.
Hey, man. If you want to talk Washington Bullets trivia, you've come to the right place. Thank you, Chrissy. We have a pro tip, by the way, that we have to get to. With the absence of Novak Djokovic and the injury concerns to Carlos Alcaraz, consider perhaps some long shot bets on the men's side at Indian Wells. Also know that Daniil Medvedev does probably have the easiest quarter draw, though. So if it ain't Medvedev, you got a shot with one of these long shots. Drew and I will do a podcast on it, Beating the Book podcast, Indian Wells, the BNP Paribas Open later today. We've done all we can do. By the way, all the pro tips sortable at VSiN.com. Lombardi Line next. Enjoy from VSiN, the sports betting network.